But if I didn't think we had a chance at winning you an exoneration, I wouldn't be here. Tessa knew what it would take for her to be found not guilty at a new trial.
You have new evidence? You have managed to locate Liam? She asked, her heart racing at the thought. Not that she didn't want him to suffer, she did, but by her own hand. It was then that an idea began to take form.
No, we haven't. I have people working on this. Randall's lead investigator, well, let's just say he valued the bottle a bit too much and is out of a job. Has been for 3 or 4 years.
Tessa was surprised at this news. Randall had always assured her his team of investigators were the best in the business. She was sure there had been more than one man. It didn't matter at this point. I didn't know, was all she could come up with.
We do have a possible witness, Whitlow stated.
Who? Tessa asked, her voice firm.
And why now?
She was angry. 10, almost 11 years of her life she had been living in hell. If there was someone out there with knowledge of her family's murders, she wanted to know why that person was just now coming forward.
Calm down, Tessa, Sam said. This is good news for you.
So you say? Try spending one damned night in this place, then tell me that's good news.
If you're not willing to go through another trial, I think our business here is over, Stephen said.
He took the files off the desk and returned them to his briefcase.
Wait a minute. I didn't say that. I just don't understand. First, it's the Florida Supreme Court making a ruling that allows my conviction to be overturned. And now you tell me there is a witness? Tessa informed him.
What kind of idiot do you think I am? Of course I want out of this place. It was at that moment that she realized why her thoughts of suicide had been nothing more than thoughts, something that she would have never acted upon. Because deep down, Tessa had always had hope. And now hope arrived in the form of a Florida Supreme Court decision and a new witness.
Yes, I will take my chances.
Chapter 4 December 2021 Tessa was really surprised that the clothes Sam brought her fit. She had lost at least 20 pounds during the 10-plus years she had been locked up. He had a good eye for size. A pair of khaki slacks, a delicate white blouse, and a yellow sweater, along with the fanciest bra she had seen since her incarceration, and soft, silky underwear, a true luxury. He'd sent a pair of leather Sperrys with a set of footies. He'd thought of everything, or maybe Bethany had chosen these clothes. As far as Tessa herself was concerned, she could have worn a flower sack and been satisfied. She had been given one chance to start her life over, and her wardrobe was the least of her problems. Once she was finished dressing, Tessa was told to wait in the small office next to the control room where she had just changed into her new clothes. She took a seat and waited for what was to come next. On the one hand, the 2 months since Lee, Stephen, and Bethany had come into her life had sped by quickly. Once the guards learned of her new trial, they treated her a bit better. Except for Hicks. She was as mean as ever. Perhaps even meaner now that Tessa might not be there for her to torment, and tried her best to get a rise out of her. Tessa knew if she had even the slightest blemish on her record, she could forget about getting out on bail while she waited for her new trial. On the other hand, time seemed to crawl, as all she could think about was getting out of jail, planning for a new trial, and figuring out how to catch Liam and destroy the perverted son of a bitch in the most painful manner possible. Lee had explained the terms of her release once the judge entered his final order into the record. Her new trial date had not yet been set, so she would be on house arrest and wear an ankle bracelet to monitor her whereabouts. She would only be allowed to leave the house to visit her attorney, and she could go to church if she chose to. She decided she would. She had to believe that it was God's plan that had sent Lee and his crew into her life, and for the first time since she had lost everything in her life that mattered to her, she was truly thankful to be alive. The dark thoughts still lingered in the back of her mind, but the bright light of hope was there now, even if it was only a shimmer. If all went as Lee expected, in a few months she would be a free woman. She would be exonerated of all charges, and her record would be expunged. She had millions in the bank, a successful company that still belonged to her. Rochelle was given $5 million a year, as was dictated in her father-in-law's will, but according to Sam, that amount was a small drop in Jameson Pharmaceuticals' financial bucket. The only downside of this change was that she had to return to San Maribel and the house where the murders had taken place. Sam had taken care of the house and assured her it wasn't the same as she remembered. She certainly hoped not. Just the thought of entering that house again caused her to panic. She had begged Lee to ask the judge if she could rent a place, buy a condo, anything other than returning to the island. But Judge Kreider had been adamant, according to Lee, whom she now trusted as much as she trusted herself. He cut straight through the flesh to the bone, but she respected that. Life after more than 10 years in prison was too short for beating around the bush. Tessa waited 20 minutes for the powers that be to formally release her. It had been confirmed that she would be released into Sam's custody, and that made her slightly uncomfortable. She had always liked him, even more so since she had been incarcerated, as he'd stayed with the company, expanding their production of a new trial drug that would possibly slow or even halt the growth of cancer cells in patients diagnosed with brain cancer. This could put Jameson Pharmaceuticals into position as one of the top pharmaceutical companies in the country. Still, memories of the moment that he placed his hand on her shoulder and her physical reaction made her feel ill at ease. Though it had been so very long since she had been offered any sort of comfort by anyone, male or female, she felt sure that her reaction was normal given her years alone. But a nagging thought that she couldn't ignore kept popping up. Am I actually attracted to Sam? How can I even have these thoughts at this pivotal moment in my life? The door opened and Tessa's thoughts were jolted back to the present when the man she had just been thinking about entered the room.
"Are you ready?"
Sam asked. There was no humor, certainly nothing remotely suggestive about his manner. But Tessa couldn't stop the faintest tinge of uneasiness when her eyes met his. He wore dark slacks, a light green shirt, and a black jacket. No tie, she noticed. But this really wasn't an occasion where formal dress was required. His dark hair was too long, and his gray eyes were piercing. It bothered her that she even noticed these physical characteristics of his. What did she really know about Sam McQuaid? He'd been Joel's friend since college, loyal to the company, but other than that, she really didn't know Sam all that well. He'd been to their house dozens of times, yet she couldn't recall his ever bringing a date to any of the functions she and Joel hosted. It didn't matter anyway. She stopped thinking about past interactions with Sam and turned her attention to the here and now. Tessa nodded and felt a wash of relief when she had no physical reaction to him as he stood next to where she sat. Taking a deep breath, she looked up at him and said, "I'm not sure how one is supposed to act at a time like this, but I'm more than ready to find out." When she stood, the weight of her new clothes suddenly felt heavy and scratchy against her skin. After more than 10 years in which her only attire was an orange jumpsuit that had softened with time, She almost wished she were allowed to bring her familiar, comfortable clothing with her. But not only did she know that wasn't allowed, but more important, doing so would be a bad way to get started on what she hoped would be the first stages of her new life as a free woman.
"I must warn you, your release is being reported on by all the major news networks, and there are several local network trucks sitting outside the prison. They'll hurl questions at you, but don't answer. Lee is here, and he will take their questions. Just do your best to ignore them. They all want to be the first one to..."
Sam stopped talking for a couple of seconds, then went on.
"They'll want to hear in your own words how you feel about having your conviction overturned, about facing a new trial, and about being released on bail, although you are still under arrest for 3 murders. Don't react, because if you do, it will be the lead story on the 6 o'clock news. Stay close to me, okay?"
It wasn't as though she had any choice in the matter. "Of course," she said. "Is there another exit we can use?" she asked, even though she knew that there wasn't. The freed convict walk to freedom was always the same. She knew this from being on the inside for so long. But if there were the slightest chance there was another way out, she wanted to know.
"This is it, I'm afraid. As soon as the warden gives us the word, we'll leave. I have a car and a driver waiting."
Tessa felt like a true criminal, being whisked out of prison, all eyes on her, all the TV reporters waiting to catch her first moment of freedom on camera. Even though her new freedom might only be temporary, it was still hot news. It was not every day that the person who had committed the most heinous crime of the century so far in Florida was released from prison. Yes, this was big news, all right. Warden Catherine Rice entered the room with her usual air of self-confidence. Only one of 3 female wardens in the state of Florida, she took pride in her position. And while Tessa had no great liking for the woman, she had always treated the warden with respect, and Warden Rice had always responded accordingly. She was dressed as usual, a dark blazer with a dark skirt and low-heeled shoes, and her auburn hair was pulled into a tight bun. She wore no makeup, but Tessa always thought her an attractive woman in a very plain way. High cheekbones, a full mouth, brown eyes. She was not the angry female many of the inmates claimed her to be. She did her job, and Tessa respected that. The warden went to the small desk in the corner of the room and picked through a large stack of papers. When she found what she was looking for, she spoke.
"Ms. Jameson, I need your signature here."
She pointed to a space on the bottom of a legal-sized sheet of paper.
"This is an inmate's release form. You may take the time to read through it if you wish, but Mr. Whitlow assured me that he has already gone over all the instructions with you."
Tessa nodded, took the paper, and signed it. She knew its contents. Rules to live by once she walked out the door. They included notifying the local San Maribel Police Department, the Lee County Sheriff's Office, and the Lee County Probation Department. She was required to make all of them aware of her release as though she were a new danger to the community. The judge had explained that since the island was still U.S. soil, and she would be monitored via an ankle bracelet, she would be allowed to stay there.
"If I may, Ms. Jameson?"
Warden Rice asked when she returned the paper to the stack on the desk.
"If you may what, Warden Rice?"
Sam asked, his tone stern.
"Mr. McQuaid, I simply wanted to wish Ms. Jameson well. She has been one of the state's most cooperative prisoners, and I simply want to wish her well."
She said this as though Tessa were out of hearing range.
"Thank you, Warden. I can't say it's been a pleasure, but I appreciate your kind words," Tessa said, letting both know that she was quite capable of speaking for herself.
"You may go," Warden Rice said.
Yes, thank you, she said. Even though the warden had no part in her early, albeit possibly temporary, release from prison.
Good luck,
she said, surprising Tessa. Tessa gave the warden an acknowledging nod and wondered briefly if the warden really meant it or just said it to every inmate about to leave the prison. Does it really matter? She asked herself. Without another word, Sam escorted her out of the office, through several long hallways, through two steel doors, and finally, the door that led to the world outside the prison gates, a world she had not seen in over 10 years. The door to freedom. The door to a new chance at life. The door leading to her search for Liam Jameson. And when she found him, she would make him pay for killing her family and robbing her of the last 10 years of her life. Chapter 5.
How does it feel to be free?
Are you going to take over at Jameson Pharmaceuticals?
Will you have more children to replace the twins you killed?
Don't say a word,
Sam cautioned, guiding her to the shiny black SUV parked close to the area where the members of the press were gathered.
All they want is to get a response from you, preferably a negative one. Remember, you don't want to be the lead story on the 6 o'clock news. Be assured that I have noted who it was who asked that last question, and once this is over, I will personally see to it that she never again works for any television, radio, or newspaper company again, and you can take that to the bank.
She walked as fast as she could, Sam's arm around her waist holding her close to him, away from the reporters, with their hands outstretched, holding smartphones and recorders in hopes of getting a comment on the record. Trying to absorb as much of the outside as she could, Tessa raised her head, letting the warm December sun of Florida caress her face. A cool breeze carried the scent of the inmate's next meal. She reveled in the fact that she would no longer be subjected to the tasteless slop they tried to pass off as food. Seafood, fresh vegetables, and fruit would be her diet for as long as she was free. She took a deep breath, inhaled the noxious odors for what she hoped was the last time in her life. Then, as soon as she reached the vehicle, a door opened, and she slid across the smooth leather seats. She inhaled the rich scent of leather and remembered her own vehicle. Briefly, she wondered if Sam had taken care of that as well, but recalled she had asked her attorney to donate her vehicle and Joel's to a worthwhile charity. Slamming the door as soon as he was inside, Sam spoke to their driver.
Get us out of here, and make sure we're not followed.
Tessa felt as though she were in another world, sort of like Alice in Wonderland, through the looking glass. This large vehicle, her own personal rabbit hole, where everything was the same, but somehow her perception of it was warped, almost freakish. She closed her eyes and opened them again, hoping to dispel the distorted image. "Where are you taking me first?" Tessa asked, realizing she had not bothered to ask exactly where she would go immediately upon her release. The words sounded false to her ears. She couldn't even imagine what they sounded like to their driver and Sam. She had been told the process, but until she had actually walked out the prison door, she had resisted really taking in anything beyond getting out the door to the prison.
You're going home, Tessa, Sam stated. It's what you agreed to.
He nodded toward the back window of the SUV,
won't follow us all the way to San Mirabel, though I suspect we'll have our share of media to deal with there, too.
She nodded, admitting to herself that she had not thought that far ahead. It was her fear of her twin girl's exposure to the jackals of the media that had sent her running to San Mirabel all those years ago. And that fear had cost her everything she valued in life. She wouldn't fear the media this time around. She might even find a way to use them to her advantage, but that was for a later time. When she had had a chance to think, time to plan how she was going to get at Liam Jameson, the son of a bitch.
As soon as we get your ankle bracelet, you'll have some time to yourself.
Tessa inhaled and slowly exhaled. At the sheriff's office? She knew this, but wanted it confirmed.
Yes, that too was part of the judge's conditions for release, Sam explained.
I know, it just seems a bit, I don't know, sort of like collaring an animal or something. Sam turned around in the front seat to face her.
That's pretty much the point. While you aren't going to have prison bars around you, you won't be able to come and go, at least not until after a trial or the charges against you are dismissed.
Of course I know that, but it still doesn't keep me from thinking it's barbaric. What happens if you remove it?
Tessa, that's not...
I know, Sam, but humor me. I am just curious. What would happen if it were removed?
First, you'd need a massive pair of cutters to remove it, which would then send a high-frequency signal to a receiver. A phone rings, and whoever is in charge contacts the proper authorities, and they begin a search for you. If you leave it on, you're fine. As long as you don't leave your assigned area without permission, you won't have a problem. But they can track your every movement if you do, since it's equipped with a GPS. Just so you know.
He was dead serious. Of course I wouldn't dare remove it. I realize it's what I have to do until after the trial. I'm fine with it, Sam. Really, she added, and gave him a half-hearted smile.
I know. I'm sorry it has to be this way.
Me too, but it's okay. Really. She had not asked Sam why he'd brought her case to Lee Whitlow, but now she needed to know. Why did you go to all this trouble, bringing my case to Lee? Sam rubbed the bridge of his nose, then raked a hand through his hair.
Because you're innocent.
Not sure of what to say, she said nothing. No one had ever said these words to her, at least not as directly. Does Rosa's story have anything to do with your belief in my innocence? Tessa asked. Since learning about Rosa's story, she was sure this had influenced Lee and his team probably even more than the Florida Supreme Court's ruling.
No, I have never doubted your story, Sam stated. No one in their right mind could do. You would never have harmed your girls or Joel. I know that, Tessa. I have always known that. But I was never called as a witness.
I don't think your testimony would have changed anything. There wasn't any evidence that required your testimony. In fact, when you get down to it, there really was no evidence against me at all.
I could have vouched for your character, Sam said. Not that it would have mattered. The district attorney had his eye on you from the beginning. Any evidence that could have turned their investigation around, they simply ignored. If Rosa had not decided to speak up, they would have fought like cats and dogs against your being released even now. I seriously doubt that they even care whether or not you are guilty. All they care about is not having their precious theory shown to be the garbage it is and always has been, and their utter lack of competence exposed to the world.
Rosa. Tessa remembered her well. She had been in her early 40s when she came to work for them. The girls were 4. It was during this time that Tessa had considered going back to work part-time, with the knowledge that both Piper and Poppy adored Rosa, and she loved them in return. Tessa had spent many sleepless nights pondering her decision. In the end, she had decided to stay home with her girls. Rosa was a great sitter and kept their large home in ship-shape order. Tessa had suspected there was more to Rosa, but her being an undocumented worker who had entered Florida illegally had not been anything she suspected back then. Joel had hired her as soon as Tessa gave her seal of approval. He'd personally taken care of the financial side, and Rosa took charge of their home. To think what Rosa might have witnessed blew her away. Thanks, Sam. Really. I don't know what I did to deserve your devotion and all of this. She gestured to the car, her clothes. I don't know if I can ever repay you. Financially, of course, she could and she would. That part was easy. But there was no price for gratitude.
You have thanked me enough. Wait until your new trial is over or the case against you dismissed. And maybe then you'll have something to really thank me for.
A warning voice sounded in her head. What did he mean? Did he expect something more? She needed to clear this up now. Sam, I'm not interested in...
I didn't mean that the way it sounded. If you are proved innocent, that's what I meant. You can thank me then, for that only. Nothing more, Tessa. Joel was my friend. You know what I mean.
Not really. It wasn't as though they'd been in constant contact since her imprisonment. Yes, he was in charge of Jameson Pharmaceuticals. After all, he was the CEO, and he gave Lara what she needed. But she really didn't know Sam well. Yes, he'd been good friends with her husband, but that had been their friendship, not hers. Uncomfortable silence. Then Tessa said, "My social graces need polishing. It's going to take a while for me to get used to this." She looked out the passenger window. "My last car ride was to prison. This is all so unexpected. You just keep on doing what you have been doing, and I plan to take one day at a time."
"Good plan," Sam agreed.
30 minutes later, they were driving up Alligator Alley, which was what the locals called I-75. Because of the many accidents that had been caused by the gators and the nearby swamps coming onto the highway, not to mention the endangered Florida panther, the roadside had been fenced off. Not, everyone understood, to protect the drivers, but rather to protect the wildlife. Tessa had always been afraid to travel this desolate road, and now some of the old panic of her past filled her as she stared out at the nothingness. Dried grass, swamps. It wasn't the sunny Florida of postcards and sandy beaches. "I have never liked this part of Florida," she said.
"Not much to like," Sam commented.
For the next hour, they rode in silence, both of them thinking their own thoughts. Tessa was glad. It would take time to absorb her new reality. People seemed different and uncaring, at least the few she had had contact with. She had always been the caring type, wanting to make things right for those around her. In doing so, she had ruined so many lives. It had cost her everything that was dear to her. Wanting to know but afraid to ask, she wondered what kind of changes had been made to her home on the island. She had always thought the place was much too extravagant, too flashy. After a few years of living there, she had gotten used to seeing yachts moored in the deep canals, Bentleys and Lamborghinis casually parked in driveways, their owners uncaring of the damage from the brutal sun. Fearful, yet curious, she wanted to focus on anything but the day that her life fell apart. She knew that once she arrived home, she would break. Maybe this was all a bad idea. Maybe she should ask the driver to turn around and take her back to the place she had called home for the past 10 years. She had accepted the fact that she would spend her life behind bars And now, this. She was getting a chance to start over, a chance to prove her innocence, and the thought scared her to death. Tessa knew what she would have to do to make things right. And she would, in due time. Chapter 6. This was almost worse than prison. Almost, she thought, as the obnoxious female deputy adjusted the bracelet on Tessa's left ankle. Tessa tried to pull her khaki slacks over the giant black ankle bracelet, but they weren't wide enough. Cuffing her slacks into a pair of makeshift capris, she would have to remember that whatever type of slacks or jeans she was able to get her hands on in the next few days would have to be either flared or boot-cut.
While you're wearing the ankle monitor, you must not drink or use drugs. If you leave your assigned area, your monitor will notify authorities. You must pay any and all court costs connected with the use of the ankle bracelet. You must have a job, and you will meet with an officer weekly.
The female deputy recited her spiel with about as much enthusiasm as a dead rat.
Do you understand these terms?
What if I said no? Yes, Tessa said instead. I understand.
Sign here.
The deputy shoved a clipboard in Tessa's face. Tessa skimmed through the form, stating she was responsible for the care and maintenance of her bracelet. I don't understand this. What if it breaks? She returned the clipboard to the woman without signing it.
It's fine, Tessa. It's just a formality, Sam said.
The deputy handed the clipboard back to her. She scanned the paper, then signed and dated it, giving it back to her. If this thing is faulty through no act of mine, what am I supposed to do? Tessa directed her question to the deputy.
Ain't no free pass. It means you violated your terms, and you're going back where you belong.
The deputy smirked. Sam held his hand up, preventing Tessa from speaking.
If there is a malfunction in the unit, they'll issue you another. Isn't that the correct procedure?
Sam glanced at the name on her badge.
Deputy Pearson? It depends, she answered. On what?
Sam asked, his tone sharp, demanding.
Ask her, the deputy said. She ain't about to keep that on her leg once she gets to that fancy mansion. It's all over the news here. I remember you.
She practically spat out the last word.
Let's get out of here before I break the law, Sam said,
giving the deputy a withering look that promised he would not forget how she had behaved and that she had better hope he didn't use his position in the community to make sure that her career in law enforcement would soon be over. Turning his back in disgust on the soon-to-be-unemployed poor excuse of a deputy, Sam took Tessa's hand and led her out the side entrance, where their SUV waited. He opened her door and she climbed inside, settling in the back seat again. She fastened her seatbelt, leaning back in the leather seat, which seemed frivolous now. Being in prison, she had learned that one only needed the barest necessities to live. Even with a fortune at her disposal, Tessa couldn't see herself as the woman of power and position she had been before. She couldn't be that woman ever again, and she didn't want to be.
Sorry about her.
Sam turned his head and said as soon as he was seated next to the driver.
Power hungry. With any luck, she won't be a deputy much longer.
I'm used to it, was all Tessa could say.
Maybe you can begin to get unused to it,
he asked. Tessa looked at him, saw he was smiling. I'm not putting the cart before the horse, Sam. If I have learned anything in the past 10 years, it's to expect nothing. That way I'll never be disappointed. Being locked away changes a person. If I'm convicted again, I'll go quietly. That deputy's words meant nothing to me. She had heard so much worse, but she wouldn't burden Sam with stories of her time in what many called the big house.
Then let's keep our fingers crossed. Lee Whitlow is one of the best criminal defense attorneys in the country. He will win this, Tessa. I know him. He wouldn't have taken your case on if he thought there was even the slightest chance of losing. I have been friends with him for years, Sam continued.
She had to know. Why didn't he step up and take my case in the very beginning?
If he is that good, then why did he wait? She wondered. Lee's wife, Jen, was undergoing treatment for breast cancer at the time of your trial. He came to me then, knowing Jameson was about to launch a clinical trial of a new breast cancer drug that has since proved to be promising. Unfortunately, Jen passed before we could get her into the clinical trials. We became even better friends. With my background in law, we had that in common. Plus, he was interested in Jameson's clinical trials, at least the cancer trials.
That explained all the pink ties he wore. Poor Lee. I had no idea.
He's been an avid supporter of cancer research since, Sam explained.
Whatever the reason, I owe him, Tessa said.
We can talk about Lee's fees later. Your case is the challenge he needs. He's a powerful man and superb attorney. Wait until you see him in a courtroom. Most jurors hang on his every word.
Tessa was only half listening to Sam. They had arrived at the dock and driven onto the ferry now. As they made their way across the bay, she viewed the giant royal palms planted by Thomas Edison in the late 1800s, lining the shore of the approaching island. They looked about the same as before, maybe just a bit taller. Most of the finest homes in San Maribel were along the shore. Some of the buildings looked to have been restored. Some former homes had been turned into coffee shops, cafes, and high-end boutiques. Not much change. She was glad for that. But as the ferry docked on the shore, on the island on which she and her family had lived, her stomach knotted, and her hands began to shake. This was a bad idea.
Sam, can't I stay at a hotel? I'm not comfortable returning to, you know, the scene, she told him.
He leaned across the front seat and reached for her hand, taking it in his own.
I wish we could, but the judge insisted on your going to your home since you actually own it. I don't know why. Maybe Chen, who's district attorney now, put a bug in his ear. He's a real prize. Still hasn't learned what deodorant is for, but he's made a bit of a name for himself. I suspect he's going to run for governor in the next election.
Tessa grimaced. I remember how disgusting he was. I guess some things never change. I just don't see how he could influence the judge if that's what happened.
I don't know that he did for sure, but he's very tight with Judge Kreider. Having the conviction in one of his most sensational cases overturned solely on the basis of his own conduct, and having to retry the matter, are bound to cause the man a great deal of concern. Remember, there was not a shred of forensic evidence to tie you to the murders. Despite the weakness of the case against you, he has used it to promote himself in the local halls of power. I'm guessing he is one major pissed-off DA.
If Chen's distress were for any other reason, she might have laughed, but it wasn't. She had lost her family, and nothing could ever replace them or make it right again, as far as she was concerned. Nothing about what had happened to them or to her as a consequence was at all funny.
Trust me, Tessa. You'll be walking into a completely different home. I think you'll approve of the changes. Since the crime that took place there brought a lot of reporters and just nosy people in general, I took it upon myself to remove the place that seemed to hold so much mystery.
Why didn't you ever give me details? She asked. It wasn't his place. Even though he'd had power of attorney over her finances, he had not had her permission to remodel the entire house. Yes, he'd mentioned changes, but at the time she had not cared to ask what they were. Now, however, she couldn't help but be curious.
I don't know. It didn't seem important at the time. I realized I was wrong not to get your permission for all the remodeling, but as I said, I think you'll be pleased with the changes made.
She had been trying to work up enough courage to ask about her daughter's bedrooms, but she just couldn't. There would be time for her to see for herself, and she wanted to be alone when she did. Unsure if Sam had remodeled their rooms, she tried not to think about it. She would find out soon enough. As they approached Tessa's former neighborhood, it was as Sam had expected. Television vans were parked along the road, news crews paced back and forth. Cameramen and women hovered nearby, all hoping to catch the first glimpse of her.
"Why don't you drop down so they can't see you? Since I'm in front with Cal, maybe they'll focus their attention on me."
So the driver actually had a name, she thought, as she unfastened her seatbelt. She folded herself into a fetal-like position on the floorboard, tucking her head between her knees.
"Just stay down until I tell you," Sam instructed. "We're about to make the turn."
"Okay," she called from her position on the floor in the back. She could hear the shouts from the reporters, several tapping on the rear window, all trying to get their attention as they slowly drove through the throngs of people. Reporters, gossip mongers, whoever. She was a damned sideshow at the moment. "Is this a mistake? Maybe I shouldn't have agreed to this. I'd already accepted my fate, so why chance it now?" "Too late," she thought, as she heard the shouts.
"Do you think the residents of the island want a child murderer in their neighborhood?"
"Are you afraid for your safety?"
"How much did you pay your new witness?"
Tessa placed her hands over her ears to block out the questions reporters shouted at the vehicle. She had not done this since she was a child.
"Don't pay attention to them," Sam called over his shoulder.
Tessa didn't answer. She just wanted out of the SUV and a few minutes alone. Though with Sam acting as her guardian, she wondered if she would ever have a few minutes to herself. For a moment, she wished she were back in the confines of her prison cell, where she had had all the time in the world to herself.
"People are standing in the street, Tessa. Stay down. Looks as if the entire neighborhood has stepped out for a view. Cal, drive around the block, get out of here, and let's see if these gawkers are willing to stand outside for a while. If we drive around for half an hour, they'll get tired of waiting."
Tessa heard Sam. "The only way out of this neighborhood is the way we came in. Go to the house, please. I can't put this off forever," Tessa said. "And I'm getting up. My back isn't used to this." She got off the floor, then scooted onto the middle seat. "Go to the house, Cal. I want to get this over with." And she did. What had she expected? This had been a major news story. Her release, albeit temporary, was a big deal. People liked to gossip, and her return to the exclusive neighborhood was going to bring a lot of nutcases out of the cracks.
"Sam?" Cal inquired. "Go to the house. Tessa's right. There's no point trying to avoid the neighbors," Sam said. "She'll have to face them sooner or later."
"Sam, stop talking like I'm not here."
"Sorry, I just want to make this as easy as possible."
Sam did sound a little bit contrite. "I know, and I do appreciate it. But I'm not a delicate little flower. I know people are curious. This was a tight-knit community once upon a time, though I'm not sure that it still is. Many of the people who lived here were snowbirds, and I barely knew them. I'll be fine.
I know you will,
Sam responded. As they were driving through her former neighborhood, she could not help but think that this was the place where her girls had spent their entire lives, where they'd celebrated birthdays, had pool parties, where they'd all lived out their lives as a family. Tears filled her eyes when they made the turn onto Dolphin Drive. Several people stood on their professionally manicured lawns as though a circus had come to town, and they were waiting patiently to see the star performers show up. What had she expected? A welcome home party? Homemade casseroles? An offer to house-sit when she returned to prison? She tried to keep her focus on the back of the front seat, but her eyes kept darting to the people who came out to witness her homecoming.
This was expected, Sam said,
and nodded to the small groups gathered around the gates to the private entrance of her former home.
Take a deep breath, Tessa.
She nodded but said nothing. Cal punched in the code and the gates swung open. More shouting could be heard as the gates closed behind them. He drove slowly up the drive, and what she had expected to see wasn't there. Her memory of her former home had been erased. Gone were the 8 full-grown coconut palm trees that had flanked the driveway, the emptiness obvious as there were no plants or shrubs replanted in their place. The outside of the house, formerly a soft antique white, had been painted a pale blue. Black shutters had been added, and it appeared as though the glass in the windows had been replaced with something darker, possibly to prevent anyone brave enough to chance a glimpse inside. The automatic garage door opened, and Cal pulled the SUV into the garage. Before she could slide across the seat, the giant door closed, blocking her view of the other changes made to the exterior of the house. Tessa opened her door and stood next to the vehicle, waiting. Cal remained in the SUV, and Sam was at her side before she even gave him a thought. This was all so familiar, yet odd. 4 cars could fit in the garage along with a million other things, yet it was empty, hollow, like her. Had she expected to see Poppy's and Piper's bicycles leaning next to the door that led to the kitchen? Hers and Joel's, too? The crates of toys she had stacked neatly against the wall ready to be donated to charity? She saw nothing remotely familiar. As though the life she had shared with her husband and daughters had been totally and completely wiped away. Like a stain. 1 minute it was visible, then, with the swipe of time, gone. Only memories remained. Images flashed before her. She squeezed her eyes tightly shut, trying to block them out, as they were not memories of their life as a happy family. Blood. Streams of blood. Aqua water turned a garish red. Bloated bodies. 2 small white caskets beside a larger dark casket. The overwhelming scent of roses.
No!
She yelled, then realized what she had done. She took a deep breath. I'm okay. She directed her words to Sam. She would never be okay again. And surely anyone in their right mind would know these were simply words to appease those whose sympathetic offerings were given, as though they could actually ease the burden of this horrific tragedy that was her life. Tessa truly appreciated any kind words, but they would not change the past, could not change it. Nothing could right the wrongs of the past. There was no magical potion to reverse the clock. If it were possible, she would have given her soul to save her daughters. And Joel, too.
Tessa? Sam asked.
Shaking her head to clear the path down which her thoughts were going, She gave up what she hoped would pass for a half-assed smile. In a no-nonsense voice, she said, "Let's go inside." And not bothering to explain her outburst, she went on. "I want to get this over with." Coming from humble beginnings, Tessa had always thought her house a bit on the lavish side. No, over the top. But she'd tried to make it as homey as possible given its size. Italian marble floors, two kitchens, one inside, another outside on the lanai, with a bamboo ceiling, and a large gazebo built around several sections of the swimming pool that branched off in every direction. It was almost like man-made canals, except for the Olympic-sized pool in the center. A large fountain, with a separate bar and fireplace in the corner, completed the outdoor part of the mansion. It had been so many years, and she knew that Sam had demolished parts of the inside of the house. But no matter how many walls were knocked down, floor tiles removed, and new furnishings installed, this was the place where her nightmare had begun. She would never have closure. Many professionals had told her that, in time, she would feel a sense of closure. Yet, to this very day, she continued to grieve for her loss. The only difference between then and now being that she hid those feelings so that it appeared to all as though she had accepted her loss. Never. Her inner rage had been simmering much too long to cool down now. Chapter 7. She entered the kitchen and stopped when she was just a few feet inside. Slowly, she directed her gaze around the large, airy, open space. The black and white tile had been replaced with cream-colored wood. The cabinets were of the same color. All of the appliances were stainless steel. None of the girl's artwork, which had been attached to the refrigerator with magnets, was there. Gone were the pots of fresh herbs she had always kept on hand. Glass jars of her favorite teas no longer lined the windowsill. As it was, this kitchen held no memories for her. It was stark and sterile. Tessa found that she neither liked nor disliked the changes. It was simply a room. Cold, she thought, and shivered.
"I'll turn the thermostat up," Sam said, walking past her to the control panel in the formal living room.
Without hesitating, she followed him. The formal living room had been expanded. The windows facing the canal were unadorned, allowing one a perfect view from anywhere in the room. She took it all in, realizing that Sam had knocked out the wall separating the formal dining room from the living area. Cream-colored sofas with matching plush chairs were located in a semicircle opposite the windows. "It's different," was all she could come up with. Her throat suddenly felt dry, and her hands began to tremble. She closed them into fists to prevent Sam from seeing just how nervous she was. Squeezing her eyes shut again, she could not block the vile projection that swept through her mind. And the smell, sharp, pungent, unidentifiable at the time. All this time later, she recognized the smell. Decomposition. Feeling lightheaded, she sat down on the nearest chair, surprised to find that it was leather, soft and cool. Closing her eyes so that she could block the view, she was still for a moment. The swimming pool, the deck, everything in her line of sight was exactly as they had been that horrible day.
"Tessa, if this is too much," Sam said.
He positioned himself on the arm of the chair, which was big enough for two people. "I just need a few minutes alone." She felt the sudden urge to walk through each room in her former home. Unsure why, Tessa stood up, a bit dizzy, but she was okay. "Maybe you can fix us a glass of iced tea?" she asked, hoping he would take the hint to leave her alone. He stood and brushed his hands up and down the length of her arms.
"Are you sure?" Shivering at his touch, Tessa had never been surer of anything in her life. The need to see each room was so overwhelming, it was as though she were being guided by some unseen force. She stepped away so that Sam could not touch her. I need to be alone now. Please.
Of course. I'll go fix us something to drink.
As soon as Sam had left the room, Tessa headed upstairs. Unclear about why, but knowing she had to do this now and not a second later. She did not know why, but for some unexplained reason she could not wait. When she reached the landing, she looked at the closed doors to her left, Piper's and Poppy's rooms, side by side with their bathroom separating them, the master bedroom to her right. She wasn't sure if she should go there first or to the girls' rooms. Again, as though she were being guided by a force unknown to her, she went to the master bedroom, and before she could stop herself, she pushed the double doors open. Expecting to see her former room as it was, with its rich mahogany furniture, the custom-made chairs by the window that overlooked the Caloosahatchee River, she was stunned when she saw that it was empty of all furniture. She thought Sam might have left this room alone. Dozens of boxes were stacked against the wall opposite the door. The windows were bare. The celery green carpet of her memory had been replaced with shiny hard wood. Why? She asked aloud, and walked over to the walk-in closet and opened the doors. Shelves that had formerly been lined with her sweaters, jeans, and shirts were empty. She traced a finger over the surface of the wood. Not a speck of dust. Sam must have hired a cleaning service. She looked at what was once Joel's side of the closet. It, too, was empty. All of their personal belongings, collected throughout the years of their marriage and before, were most likely stacked in those boxes against the wall. What had she expected? That Sam would remodel the entire house yet leave their personal possessions alone? Truly, she had not given it serious thought until now. The master bedroom had been stripped of everything. Nothing of her past was visible but for the boxes, which she assumed contained Joel's clothes and hers, in addition to personal items, her journals, his favorite crime novels. Memories of her and Joel picking out their bedroom furniture, the fabric for the drapes, the chairs, and all the myriad items that went along with decorating a home flooded her. She tried to recall exactly how she had left their bedroom the day she left for the mainland. The bed was unmade, she remembered that much. It had been Rose's day to wash the linens, so she had not bothered making up the bed. And she remembered thinking this as she hurriedly packed for her so-called weekend getaway. What had happened to the Louis Vuitton luggage she had packed, and all the necessities she had packed for her daughters? It had been evidence. She hated using that word. She knew this. But wasn't it supposed to be returned to the family? Had Sam packed it away with the rest of their personal belongings? She stepped out of the closet and stood in the middle of the room. Never had she imagined she would return to her former home once she had been convicted. If she had ever dwelt on returning, she was sure she would have gone utterly mad. Disciplined after years of confinement, Tessa struggled with this new reality, a reality that allowed her thoughts to return to the past. Inside prison for the first few years, it was all she could do to not think about her freedom. And now that she had been given a sort of freedom, albeit temporary and with harsh conditions that constrained her in a different way, she didn't like the path her thoughts had ventured on since she had learned that her conviction had been overturned and she had been granted a new trial. Before, she had accepted the fact that Liam had gotten away with murder, and it truly didn't matter where she lived because there was no life without her family. Now she wasn't so sure about her future. At least inside prison, she knew the rules. There had been no reason for her to think about the what-ifs and maybes. All of a sudden, a dozen thoughts were swirling in her mind. She needed something concrete to focus all her nervous energy on. At least until the trial...